And we're talking about your soul with Rob Schwartz. His books, of course, are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com through his website. His latest book is called Your Soul's Love. And let's get into the calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you along with Rob Schwartz as we talk about your soul. And Rob, I'll let you finish up on your online workshop. Tell us more about it.
So the workshop is described on the events page at yoursoulsplan.com, June 26th and 27th, a Saturday and a Sunday. I give a talk about pre-birth planning. We do the Divine Virtues exercise, which tells you the qualities you're working on in this lifetime. Your pre-birth desire to cultivate and express those qualities is one of the main reasons you planned your biggest challenges. And once you know which qualities you're working on, that's really important information to have, because then in the future when new challenges come along, instead of feeling victimized or powerless, you just say to yourself, okay, I know that I am in this incarnation to cultivate and express this virtue, that virtue, and that virtue. Knowing that, how can I work with this new challenge to do that? So it has the effect of immediately assigning deeper meaning to something that otherwise might appear to be meaningless suffering. And then you can learn the lessons in a more conscious manner. And then we do two group hypnotic regressions. The first is to contact one or more loved ones who are on the other side, including deceased pets. And if the form of contact is verbal or telepathic, you can ask them any questions you have about your life plan with them. And then we do a group between life soul regression, which I described earlier. That gets you to the Council of Elders, where you can ask literally any question about your life. But I will prompt the group to ask a series of preset questions that cover all the major areas of their life. And if they stick with those, by the time we're done, they should have a very good idea of what they plan for this lifetime, how they're doing in terms of fulfilling that plan, and what else they need to do so that when the lifetime is over and they have their life review, instead of feeling a sense of dissatisfaction or incompletion, they can say to themselves, hey, I did a great job in that lifetime, and I'm ready to go on to the next stage of learning.
How do we end up with evil if they're going to pre-plan their life? I mean, do they pre-plan evil and get away with it?
Well, first you have to define what you mean by the term evil. Now, when you say the word evil to me, it implies that somebody's nature is evil. And if somebody's nature is evil, that means it can't be changed. That's their nature. That's who they are. If that's the definition of evil, then I would suggest to you that nobody is actually evil, because I don't believe that anybody is permanently like that. I think what happens with people who do what we call evil is that they have the spark of the divine, the spark of God within them, just as quote-unquote good people do, but they use their free will to make unloving, fear-based decisions. And the more times they make decisions like that, the less aware they are of the divine spark within them. And eventually it becomes so faint that they're completely oblivious to it, and they're acting strictly out of ego-based interests. But even those people, over eons of time, will eventually come to understand what it is they're doing. They will change their mind about that, and they will eventually get back on a path of what you could call light and love.
I mean, because eventually, if, you know, a serial killer does what they do, they're not going to be, you know, rewarded for that, are they?
Well, let's talk about the person who most people think of when we use the word evil, and that would be Hitler. So I have asked about Hitler in the channeling sessions I did for the books, and what I'm about to share with you is not in the books, but I'll tell you what Spirit told me when I asked about Hitler's life plan. What I was told is that, believe it or not, his life plan as set up by his soul was for him to be a great spiritual leader. And so his soul equipped him with certain gifts that were intended to bring that about, gifts of charisma, oratory, rhetoric, and so forth. Now, again, we all have free will. He apparently had an extremely difficult childhood, and so acting out of unhealed pain, he used his free will to utilize those gifts to go 180 degrees in the other direction. I then asked, well, where is Hitler now? What has become of him? And what I was told is that he is back on the other side. He is aware of what he did. And he is punishing himself by repeatedly recreating and reliving his death, which apparently was a very painful death. Now, it's important to point out here, he is not being punished by God or any being external to himself. He's doing this to himself. He is surrounded by guides and angels who love him and who are sending light and love to him. But because of the state of his consciousness, he can't perceive that love or light. That will eventually change. He will eventually start to perceive it. Then he will move into the light. And then at that point, presumably, he will feel that he's got an awful lot of karma to balance, and he'll set in motion a series of lifetimes to balance that karma.
What about the 6 million souls, Rob, that he destroyed?
So my understanding is that some of them, at least some of them, agreed to have that experience coming back to the divine virtues that we talked about earlier. So compassion, for example, is one of the divine virtues. If you want to really understand as a soul what compassion is, you can't do that by reading about it. You can't do that by observing somebody else being compassionate. You can only understand compassion from the inside out. You have to live it. So think about what the experience in a concentration camp could provide a soul to do. Let's say that you are in a concentration camp. You're in a chain gang that is being forced to do manual labor. You're given nothing more than one piece of bread to eat in the entire day. And you then have the opportunity to use your free will to break that little piece of bread in half, turn to the person in the chain gang next to you and hand them half your piece of bread or perhaps even all of it. That's compassion from the inside out. Now, you might say, well, this is a level of suffering nobody in their right mind would choose. And yes, that's true from a strictly human point of view. But you have to understand that when you plan things like this from the other side, there are some very big differences in your perspective. One of them is that you are acutely aware that nobody is permanently harmed by anything that happens here. Another big difference in perspective is that from the non-physical, when you plan your life, you know that a lifetime is actually very brief. And the third key difference is that from the non-physical vantage point, you know that the wisdom becomes part of you literally for all eternity. So from that perspective, no one is permanently harmed. A lifetime is very brief. The wisdom becomes part of your soul literally from all eternity. From that perspective, it actually does make sense that somebody would plan that kind of experience.
I haven't heard you talk about angels, Rob. How come?
You know, that is not a focus of my work, but in some of the channeling sessions for the books, angels appeared and spoke quite lovingly and quite elegantly about whatever it is that we were asking them. I'm thinking in particular of a story that's in my first book, Your Soul's Plan. We were talking about the idea that people very often feel quite cut off, quite separate from angels, from guides, from God, from the other side. And the angel said to us, and I quote, "We are as close to you as the width of a hair on your head." And I'll never forget that sentence because I thought it made the point quite well. And yet, even that sentence is a little bit misleading because it implies there's a separation that's the width of a hair on somebody's head, when in fact there's literally no separation at all. But even so, it's a good analogy for getting the point across.
All right, let's take some calls here, and then we'll finish it up next half with other calls. We will go to Elisa in Oregon. Welcome to the program. Hi, Elisa.
Hi, George. Hi, Robert. I'm a huge fan. I've read many of your books and reread them and watched your YouTube channel. I'm totally on the same page with you as far as, you know, getting downloads and experiencing pure divine love. When you experienced that, was that just momentarily, or is that something you carry with you? And my main question is, how does the soul get into the body during incarnation, to the best of your knowledge?
The experience of divine love, the one that I talked about earlier in the show, lasted about an hour. And even though it was a brief experience, it really did not need to be any longer than that because it was so powerful and so memorable. It changed everything. It changed my concept of who I am. It changed my understanding of who everybody else is. It changed my understanding of what the universe is based on, which is unconditional love. It accomplished, I think, exactly what my soul intended it to accomplish. In regard to your other question, how does the soul get into the body? If you read the general literature on that subject, it's contradictory, and there are different statements about exactly when the soul comes into the fetus, and is it this month or that month, and it comes in permanently at a certain time, or it comes in and goes in and out over the course of a number of months. I would refer you to my second book, Your Soul's Gift. There's an entire chapter about the pre-birth planning of miscarriage, and at the end of that chapter, there's a special channeling about abortion, and there's information in there that will address your question.
Let's go to Dan in Cleveland, Ohio. Hello, Daniel. Go ahead.
Yeah. You made a comment, George, about why does the body need a soul?
Right.
Why does a car need a driver?
Right. That's a good point.
Why does a car need a driver? In other words, the true you is your soul. The body is just something that drives around in when it's here on Earth. Think of it as.
It's our vehicle. That's it.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, the true you is your soul. It's immortal. It's eternal.
What do you think of that, Robbie?
I think that's exactly right. And I want to say to Dan, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio.
Aha. Go Indians.
Yeah, that's right.
So tell us more about this soul and needing the body to function, vice versa.
Well, it's exactly what was just described. The body itself is simply like a suit of clothes. You put it on for whatever time you're going to be here. You take it off when you're going to leave. Or you could think of it as a car. It's your vehicle of transport while you're getting around here. The body itself is neutral. It's not inherently positive or negative. It's not inherently good or bad. It follows consciousness. So it will mirror back to you your state of consciousness. And when something in the body is not working quite the way you would like it to, it's a spiritual message, which is very often difficult to interpret or decipher. But it's a message that is intended to mirror something to you about where you are at your stage of evolution and where you need to go.
Is Christina still alive, the one who was involved in that pipe bomb?
She is, yes.
My gosh, what a horrible situation. What was the motive, by the way? Were they trying to get the guy, the owner of the company?
The motive, we looked at it from a broader perspective than that. We went into Christina's pre-birth planning session, and we heard the conversation she had with the soul who would eventually become the bomber. Essentially, what was happening in his case is that he was bringing back into body unhealed energies from past lives, which he knew would be expressed in the form of anger, and he knew that planting a bomb was one potential that might be actualized as an expression of the anger. Now, having said that, his hope was that he would find some way to heal or rise above the anger, but it was understood clearly that he might not be successful in that. And what she said to him in the pre-birth planning session was essentially, I'm okay with that. If you cannot heal the anger and you do eventually plant this bomb, I will work with it to foster my own spiritual evolution. And then I asked the question, well, what if he succeeds in healing the anger and never plants the bomb? Then how does Christina evolve in the way that she wants to evolve? And the response from Spirit was that she will magnetize to herself some other equivalent to a bomb explosion that will motivate her to evolve in the way that she wants to evolve.
You said earlier that the medium you worked with channeled Jesus. How do we know you're not being tricked in that kind of situation by the spirits?
Well, two things. One is that I've had multiple personal sessions with each of the mediums and channels who are in my three books, and they were all able to present to me information about my life that I know to be true and that they would have no way of knowing unless it was genuinely
right.
Coming.
Well, I mean, though, how do they know they're not being tricked by the other side?
Well, you look at the quality of the information, the vibration, and the amount of love that's in it. If we just talk about Jesus in the abstract, you can't really get a sense of any of that. But if you read his words in those channeling sessions in the books, The level of wisdom is extraordinary. The intensity of his love is extraordinary. You might be able to question whether or not it's actually Jesus, but you really can't question that there's a highly evolved spiritual master speaking. That is very clear.
Interesting take on all of that, to be sure. Dominic in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Dominic. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. I love your program tonight.
Thank you, by the way.
My question is, I've actually always been legally blind, but it's weird is because I feel like I've always been born in the wrong body. I mean, I am legally blind, but I've excelled in everything. And I'm curious, can that happen where you are actually put in the wrong body?
Can that happen, Rob?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I have not encountered anything like that in my research. I will say, though, in your soul's plan, there's a story about somebody who is completely blind. And it's very interesting what happened with him. That was actually not part of his original pre-birth plan. But what happened was he was born prematurely. He was put in an incubator at the hospital. And the nurse who put him in the incubator put too much oxygen into the incubator, which caused him to be blind. Well, when the blindness occurred, his spirit guides pulled him out of the baby's body, took him back over to the other side, and showed him what was happening. And they said to him, this accident has taken place. There's too much oxygen in the incubator. You will be legally blind if you continue with this incarnation. We're giving you the option to end the lifetime right now and plan another one, or you can continue with it. And so then there's this long discussion with his guides about the pros and cons, and they actually bring in a soul who he has a contract with to be in a romantic relationship later in that lifetime, and she backs out of it. She says, this is not what you and I agreed, and if you continue with this incarnation as a blind person, then you need to find another partner.
Jeez.
And he's okay with that. He says, I want to take on this challenge, and he goes back into the baby's body.
And was blinded.
Blinded. And he's one of the few blind people in the world who has actually never seen any light. As I understand it, most blind people can perceive at least a little bit of light. He's never had that experience, so he has no idea what anything looks like, including light.
It's all darkness to him, isn't it?
Yeah.
But he did that on his own. It was his own choice.
It was his own choice. He could have ended the incarnation and planned another lifetime, but his guide said to him, if you continue, here's what you could learn through the experience of blindness. He listens very attentively, and then he comes to his own conclusion. He says, you know, I know this is going to be extraordinarily difficult, but I also know that it's a rich opportunity for learning, and I want to take it on.
Brad, we're going to come back, Rob, in just a moment and take final phone calls with you. Rob Schwartz, our special guest, fascinating, talking about the soul. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're talking about synchronicity. And then later on, if you own a dog, don't miss the program, because we're going to talk about the amazing things that dogs have done for all of us. So that's our next Coast to Coast program. And welcome back to our final segment with Rob Schwartz. George Norrie back with you. His website, yoursoulsplan.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Rob, do you have any doubts at all, that the soul exists?
None whatsoever. Everything that I have seen in my research indicates that the soul exists. And it's more than just an intellectual understanding. It's something visceral that I sense intuitively. You know, I think truth has a certain vibration or resonance to it. And when you say soul, I just know that it's true.
The invention of the human body and the soul combination was remarkable, don't you think?
I think it is remarkable. And as I understand it, it's very different now than it used to be. One of the channel consciousnesses in my books is an ascended master named Aaron. He's had many lifetimes over a long period of time. And he talks about how before recorded history began, when Earth was new, the soul incarnated into human bodies that lived for hundreds of years. That was the average experience. And then through a series of not-so-wise free will decisions, ego came into being, and it assumed prominence in the way the human being thinks. And those sorts of egoic decisions lowered the vibration of the human body, and then we ended up with a much shorter lifespan like we have now.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Chris in Fresno, California. Hello, Chris. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Hey, thank you very much, George.
Sure
nice
thing.
Talking to you again.
You too.
We got to say a prayer for Cornelius.
Oh, yeah. We sure do.
Yeah, he doesn't sound good either. I listen to your show every night, but listen, I'm blind. I'm legally blind. And I have been for about 7 years now. I do believe in God, and at least I pray, I hope I am. And my problem with life now is that I don't have any sense of, you know, my soul. I believe, like I said, I believe in God, but it's like everything around me and everything I seek, due to COVID and everything else, like I feel like I'm at a dead end, and I really don't have any answer or clue or anything as to whether or what to how to, you know, like I just got out of a prostate surgery, and I've got a catheter, and I'm getting that taken out, but all my life I've had, you know, numerous operations and stuff, and now I feel like I'm at a dead end.
Well, what do you think of that, Rob? How do we help him?
Well, the most powerful tool I have to help him by far is the Between Lives Soul Regression, which he could do as a private client in a private session, or take the online workshop, go to yoursoulsplan.com to the events page, have someone read to you the information that's there. In the Between Lives regression that we do as a group in the workshop, you would have an opportunity to ask the Council of Elders about the blindness, about the physical issues, about any aspect of your life. I can't guarantee that you will go into trance. No hypnotist can make that guarantee, but the odds are very much in your favor. And we will send you information prior to the workshop, certain things you can do to get ready and increase the chance of going into trance. If you have that experience, you will get answers to everything you just asked about.
All right, Chris, go for it, my friend. You had mentioned that the Council of Elders like to remain somewhat anonymous. Why is that?
I don't know that I said that or that is actually true. But I will say they don't put the focus on themselves. When somebody gets in front of the council, so to speak, the focus is on that person. So the beings who are on the council, they are very wise, very loving, very highly evolved, so evolved that it's really beyond human comprehension. But they're not interested in saying things that indicate to you how evolved they are. Their focus is on what is for the highest good of this person who has come to talk to us, and they will explain very abstract concepts in quite simple terms so that people can actually apply it in their lives.
Let's go to Beth Ann in Bristol, Wisconsin. Hello, Beth Ann.
Morning, George.
Morning.
I have to apologize. I have a little bit of laryngitis.
Oh, that's okay. Just don't overdo it.
No, and shout out to my brother Michael in Iowa. You remember us.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, my question for Rob is, how do you manage humility, guilt, and omnipotence? Because I want to say that I never feel alone, and I don't think this is my first time here.
Humility, guilt, and
omnipotence.
In other words, I feel like I know things I shouldn't already know. And also the empathy factor. Like if someone's unkind to me, I give someone else a sandwich, you know?
Well, that always comes around too. That works.
So how do the knowings come to you?
I just feel like I'm being mocked at times. And, you know, I turn the other cheek. In other words, how do you manage knowing what you know without having guilt and still maintaining humility?
You know, the humility part is actually very easy, because the longer I do this work and the more I acquire spiritual wisdom, the more I learn through the channeling sessions and the regressions, every time I get an answer to a question, it seems to raise at least two more questions. So even though the absolute amount of knowledge I'm acquiring is always increasing, the number of questions is increasing faster than the amount of knowledge. And that is a genuinely humbling experience.
Well, it sure is. And with the soul itself, Rob, how do we know that, you know, I get back to this evil and demon stuff. How do we know we're getting a legitimate soul? Do we?
You know, there are beings on the lower astral planes who are what you could call tricksters, who do not have people's best interests at heart. And so before we start the channeling sessions, we say certain prayers that are intended to provide protection and prevent any such negatively intentioned beings from contacting us. And I don't believe that that has ever happened in a single one of the sessions that I've done for any of the books. We've never been contacted by what I would consider to be a lower vibrational or negatively intentioned being. Our intentions are to bring forward the greatest amount of love and the highest level of wisdom, and the intention puts in motion energies that then fulfill the intention itself.
Let's go to Joe in Monterey, California. Hello, Joseph.
Thank you, George. Could you talk about the different levels of soul, like the soul colors and the different levels that they have? That's spiritual, you know, their soul evolution. And could you also talk a little bit about soul's relationship to intelligent design and how it takes part in it? And unexplored souls.
Are there different levels where the souls are, Rob?
There are different levels of evolution, certainly. And when you talk about soul colors, this is something that Michael Newton looked into. He was a hypnotist, and back in the 1990s, he founded the field of what he called life between lives, or LBL regression. That's the same thing as what I call a between life soul regression. He just used a different terminology. And what he found in channeling sessions with his own clients was that the colors in a soul's aura indicated certain levels of advancement or lack of advancement. And I don't recall now what colors meant exactly what, but that's all laid out in his books, Journey of Souls, Destiny of Souls. Those are classics in the field.
And what was your second question, Joe?
Intelligent design. How soul, yes. At the level of soul, not, you know, like you and I, George, but at the level of soul, they're one with the Holy Spirit at that level, and they take part in intelligent design.
Is there a science? Sure. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what the caller means by intelligent design, but what comes to mind is that in...
I would say God.
Say that again?
I would say God would be intelligent design.
Well, we asked Jesus some questions along these lines in the channelings for Your Soul's Gift. And what he explained, he talked about three levels of the soul. The highest vibrational level was the level at which all of us are one, including one with God. And then at a step-down level of vibration, you have the individuated soul, but that's still an ultra-elevated vibration. And then at a much lower vibration, you have the individuated personality. So there's actually no separation between any of the levels, but there are differences in vibration, which means differences in evolution and differences in wisdom.
All right, Joe, thank you. Walter in Pennsylvania. Hello, Walt.
Hi, George. As always, it's great to be on with you, buddy.
Thank you, sir.
George, Mr. Schmidt's... it's a very interesting conversation. Now, you know where I'm coming from, George, and you know, we could say that, you know, I don't necessarily believe that we have a personal immortal soul, but scientifically, you could say that our matter rather than our soul is immortal, because Isaac Newton, if I'm not mistaken, said that matter can neither be created nor destroyed. Now, you know, what's really mind-blowing, if you want to reconcile this with religion, George, is that our matter is being constantly recycled, if you want to call it energy or whatever. And, George, undoubtedly, if you take, like, Christ, if he lived, you know, he as he grew, he ate and he drank and he took in matter and his body grew. But, George, that matter is recycled. That undoubtedly there is still matter on this earth that was part of Christ's body. And, you know, that matter could have been recycled into somebody as evil as Hitler. So Hitler and Jesus could have shared matter. So this is a mind-blowing thing that, you know, if you want to think about it that way, George.
I think the odds of that happening, though, Walt, were pretty remote, to tell you the truth. Rob, you agree?
Well, I agree that energy cannot be destroyed. It just changes form. So when a lifetime ends, your energy continues, but it goes from being physical to being non-physical. When we talk with Aaron, one of the Ascended Masters, in the channeling sessions, and we ask him what is it like to come out of a physical body and change form and become non-physical, he likens it to walking from one room of a house to another. And he says, you know, when you leave one room and enter another room of your home, are you different? No, you're the same person. You're just in a different room. He said it's really as simple as that.
First-time caller Marcus in Columbus, Indiana. Hello, Marcus.
How you doing, George?
Great. Good to have you with us.
Well, I appreciate you taking the call. Thanks, Tommy. I want to give a shout-out to my daughter, Selah. It's her third birthday today.
Oh, happy birthday.
So, Rob, I have a few quick questions here for you. I'm just going to throw them at you and answer at your leisure here. So I do believe that love is the base fabric of everything in the universe. So how can I get in touch with my soul's purpose in a more practical, useful way to focus on and implement raising my vibration? Because right now where I'm at in life, 31 years old, I feel as though I'm not living my soul's full, complete purpose. I'm not utilizing my gifts or past lessons to the fullest extent. And that's one, and kind of going off of that a little more, how can I tap into previous lessons to better serve me in this life and the next? So like, when is that reincarnation done?
Take that first one first, Rob. How does he upgrade himself?
You know, the answer to that question is deceivingly simple and easy. Whenever you have to make a decision, ask yourself, what would love do now? And if you do whatever the answer to that question is, that will raise your vibration and accelerate your evolution more than anything else you can do.
And the second question, of course, Marcus, want to throw that out real quickly again?
Sure. So how can I tap into previous lessons to better service myself in this life and the next? And is that reincarnation ever done?
All right. How do you do that when you're awake?
If by previous lessons you mean previous lives, you could simply do a past life regression. I don't offer those myself, although the between life soul regression has an abbreviated past life regression within it. But you can find many people who practice standalone past life regressions. That can be a long and tedious process, though, because the average person has had hundreds, if not thousands, of past lives. You probably want to go into those sessions with a more specific intent and ask, what is most important for me to know right now? And then that will take you to whatever past life you most need to know about right now.
Super. Rob, thanks for being on the program. You take care and come back again. Let's not let 6 years go by. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.